My name is Gail Evans, and I'm here with Bob Wandel to help interview folks that knew Dr. Burkhart when he was here at First Community Church. I believe his service was from 1935 to 1958. I hope I'm right about that. And we're wanting to know more about Dr. Burkhart and try to establish a legacy for the library that's permanent, with stories and photos and articles and any other memorabilia that we can find to have a permanent collection in the library. And so we're going to ask several people that have come today to tell us stories, relate things that they remember, experiences that they had with Dr. Burkhart.
Maybe it would help if we would go around the room and introduce ourselves, as so all these sounds have a name to them. I'm Bob Wandel.
I'm Barbara Sipp.
Ann Knott.
Susie Harpham.
Linda Cummins.
So Linda, what was a fond memory of yours, or a memory?
I have several memories, but some people have already spoken of things that brought back lots of good memories, too. I'm looking at some of the questions we have, but my first memory of Dr. Burkhart was when I was either 5 or 6 years old. My parents decided it was time to come to church, and there were no churches in Arlington at that time in the 40s. And we took a bus. We walked about 5 blocks. It wasn't easy to get a bus to come to church. And at that time, my Sunday school class was in the First Avenue house. And I was a little apprehensive, I believe, because I was an only child. I'd not been separate from my parents. This is the first time I was kind of going out on my own. But I walked in that First Avenue house, and I can see him, Dr. Burkhart, to this day. He was leaning on the railing, and he was welcoming the children. He not only just welcomed them, but he leaned down, and it was eye to eye. It was eye contact, and welcomed us. I looked up, then he stood up, and I looked up at him, this man with his blue eyes and this black robe. I really thought he was God. My parents had obviously told me I was going to learn about God and meet God at church. And that's my very first memory, and I can see him to this day every time I go by there. And that building isn't there anymore, but that was my very first introduction to Dr. Burkhart.
I have a fond memory of when I was a counselor at Camp Akita, and we always had evening vespers, and one of the most memorable ones was of Berkey rowing across the lake, and I can just hear the swish of his paddle in that canoe. And out of the stillness, there was a fog generated by dry ice, and he spoke the Sermon on the Mount. And it really felt like Jesus was walking on water.
And can you think of anything special about his theology or his philosophy that was remarkable to you?
Well, you know, he really never shied away from personal involvement. He, with all the members, for instance, he visited regularly. He wrote letters to the servicemen, and then he made sure he talked, you know, got them together when he came back. I even have a letter that he wrote to my parents, just thanking them for the work they had done. So his philosophy really stemmed from personal care to all of us. And the theology of the church, really, that was his, was across all the seasons. And he was able to really influence every age.
How would you describe Dr. Burkhart in terms of what kind of person do you remember him as? Or for those of us that, like me, that didn't know him, what's the first thing that comes to your mind?
Well, I think perhaps what you would notice if you had seen the portrait that is near Burkhart Chapel. I think one of the first things you notice are his eyes. And he always made eye contact with everyone.
There were times that my husband, who was also with Dr. Burkhart when we were teenagers, if he came down the aisle at the end of a sermon and he felt someone was troubled, some of the teenagers, he would say, "I want to see you in my office next week. Call me." And he just, he had a way of making you feel important and that he cared about you. And his eyes were very, people would say they were so penetrating, you didn't feel like you could keep any secrets from him.
So you felt like he had a special gift.
Yes, he did. And he, particularly with young people. And if you wanted a story, he was very early in doing marriage counselors for young people. And my husband and I met in kindergarten, and we didn't date until we were juniors in high school. But we got married when we were 21, and we're married 52 years before he passed away. Berkey had us come and take his test. He was so excited when he heard we were getting married. And he said, "You have to come and take my test, because if it doesn't show that you two should be able to make this marriage work, I'm throwing my tests out." So we took it, and the only thing he said was, he said, "You're both very independent. You may have to be careful about that." And I said, but what he didn't know was that my husband was going to travel all over everywhere with his job, and I would end up at home by myself with four kids. And if I hadn't been independent, it would have been a severe problem.
Yeah.
So
well, that was fun to hear from him, though, wasn't it? And to remember.
Yes.
Bob, do you have any questions that you'd like to ask?
Susie, what's your fondest memory of Berkey?
My fondest memory would be when I was a young teenager. And it's kind of sad, actually, but it's fun. My mother was diagnosed with a malignant brain tumor, and she and my father were very busy in the church. They loved Roy Burkhart, but she was very ill, and she remained very ill for about 3 years. And when finally the time came for them to do the surgery that they had been waiting to do at University Hospital, they did the surgery, and they weren't able to help, so she was not going to make it. So my father was with her, and we were not, because we were not old enough to go to the hospital. And he was in, you know, very bad shape, and he just heard this funny sound. And out in the hallway, walking down the hall in fishing boots, was Roy Burkhart. He said, "I've been fishing on the lake at Camp Akita, and I saw Vivian, and I didn't see a green light." And he walked in the room, and she passed away.
Gosh.
So big for my dad.
Really spectacular.
I think that story is common to several other people, that he was very aware of what the feelings and emotions were of his congregation.
Well, I think it was under Dr. Burkhart when Camp Akita came about with the beginnings, and that through that whole effort, that's had an impact on my life and the third generation now, and hopefully someday the fourth generation. My thinking about him, my first word that comes to mind is he always had a presence. He was always there. He was always thinking ahead. He was always going beyond the boundaries. And Camp Akita was one of the first things that I remember. He was going beyond the bounds as a child, at least, because I enjoyed it so much.
He was very calming. Mm-hmm. If you were a teenager and you were harassed or whatever, he was just in his presence. It was just calm.
Why was Camp Akita so special?
I think really Berkey always spoke to the youth. He could spot a youth, as we've mentioned, in the crowd who needed help. And I think he always thought that if he could get young people to come to the church, their parents would follow. So he knew Camp Akita was a place that, you know, a lot of real personal growth could take place, because there was a lot of fun. There was always morning watch when everybody got up and went to the lodge and then went off by themselves to just sit and be by themselves. And I think it just became very important in everybody's life. Family camps were a very big thing there.
So he actually started Camp Akita?
Yes, he did, with a very large bequest of a family mm-hmm. in the church who who could give the land and build the lodge and the dining hall.
It continues today to be so very successful
mm-hmm. yes.
in mm-hmm. helping kids. All my grandchildren have gone there. Loved it.
Well, when we went down there, camp was relatively new. And I think Berkey always thought that one of the best things to do, which I agree, was to keep teenagers busy. So one of the things that we did was when we weren't having morning watch, which was really a morning devotional program mm-hmm. that we had as a group, and then we went off to have contemplative time by ourselves. And when we weren't involved with that or something that was biblically related, we'd have free time, etc. So what we did was we went out and helped build trails. And he was right along there with the shovel helping us. And so we built a lot of the trails through Camp Akita. Mm-hmm. One of the other things I was thinking about that has influenced my life has been that we had a Wednesday after a Wednesday evening, I think it was at 7 o'clock, we had what they called prayer cell. And we met in the chapel and we had what, half hour of quiet, and then we went together and had dinner together and talked, and he would give a little mini sermon like, and I think that has made me very comfortable with quiet, which I'm not sure children realize now.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. Bob, what do you have that you'd like to ask?
I want to pick up on the Sermon on the Mount story that mm-hmm. that Ann talked about. He would also, in the second or third week of December, get up in the pulpit, and that was his sermon, the Sermon on the Mount, and he'd do it from memory with passion. Mm-hmm. And it was a beautiful thing. There's another story that's important about Akita. The land was given by a wonderful family, and there were many other men who had different professions like engineer or builder that used their expertise to help build a camp. And as Barbara said, us little guys, we helped do the heavy work that we were instructed to do by the men of the church. But the church property did not have an access. It was a piece of property that didn't touch any road or any road that was a good access. So there was a farmer who had control over the access to the land. And this was right after World War II. And Burkhardt found out that this farmer did not have a tractor. And you couldn't get tractors after World War II. They just didn't exist.
They didn't make them.
They didn't make them, that's right. But Burkhardt found a tractor, gave it to the farmer, and Akita had access.
What a story. Great story.
Yeah.
Bob, you knew him too, didn't you?
Mm-hmm.
What kind of impact did he have on your life?
He sort of wanted me to be a minister. And I started on that path in eighth grade and ninth grade and recognized that one of the things of being a minister was that every Sunday morning you had to give a sermon. And I wasn't quite sure that I had the fortitude to think of something fresh to say once a week.
That didn't sound like fun to you.
Well, it wasn't that, but I was passionate about his love of people and mm-hmm. what we've heard here at the table of mm-hmm. his concern for people. And he came out of the youth program in Pennsylvania and brought that here. And it is true that he thought the youth were the foundation of the church. They were indeed the future of the church. And I can remember in the high school programs, he would say, you know, it's hard to get the boys to come to Sunday school. So what we're going to do is we're going to get the homecoming queen, and we're going to make her a member of the Sunday school thing. And then we're going to get the football captain to be a member of the Sunday school program. And lo and behold, the combination of the homecoming queen and the football captain, everybody wanted to come.
That sounds like genius to me.
He also got Lowell Riley, who was the music director. This was a stroke of genius, too. They had a senior high choir, but it was all women. So the boys all came when choir got out to see the girls. So that's how they got involved then with the Brownlee program, which was on Sunday evenings. And now the youth are meeting again on Sunday evenings, and it's been very successful, I understand.
Good to hear. Bob, you've thought about this a lot. How would you describe Reverend Burkhart's philosophy or theology? Can you put that in so many words?
Well, obviously the foundation of his faith was the Sermon on the Mount, the Beatitudes. He never really said that, I don't think, but just the way he continually talked about. And it's sort of interesting in these times, I think that it's more and more important that we continually reflect on the Sermon on the Mount. But I think he used that as the foundation of much of his teaching and much of his preaching. His strength was people. I mean, he was just able to connect with people. The death story that Susie talked about happened, I think, many times. I think Patty Mielke had the same experience with her parents. And it just happened over and over. He had an awareness about him. But he also had an intellect about him, which you wouldn't ordinarily think of a passionate person having an intellect too. But he befriended a philosopher by the name of Paul Brunton, who was an Englishman who studied with Freud and visited Dayton one time. And they met accidentally. And Brunton, who was a seer also, he had this capability of seeing things in people, said to Burkhart, you have this presence about you, don't you? And Burkhart said yes, and they corresponded ever since. He also met once a year, I believe, in some neutral place with Adolf Huxley, and they talked about philosophy. And so he not only was a spiritual person, he was very much aware of the secular issues in life.
Would you call that really sensitive intuition or something like that, that he combined with his intellect gave him just very special sensitivity to people?
Well, he generated, as church history will say, the seven keys, and one of the keys is acceptance. And I think that was central to his philosophy. He accepted everything. And he put no roadblocks or judgment in the way of anything. He accepted every person and every action.
I think his psychology background was a great help, too, because he could foresee things with that background, and coupling that when he was in the ministry then and got his Doctor of Divinity, he just was able to pull all this together. But I keep hearing the words, which I think of too, is that he had a presence on all age levels and a passion, and he wanted to be, he was a people person, and he wanted to be involved. And I often get out some old tapes. I love to hear his voice. Mm-hmm. He had a very unique voice, I think. It's very soothing. I love to hear it. It brings back wonderful memories. His Sermon on the Mount, I've heard many times. It's just that presence and passion in his way with people and being able to, with a psychology background, put his finger on things that needed attention.
He was the first person I ever saw meditate. He would come to our house late at night, and I think he worked very late, and he would sit down and say, "Excuse me," for 10 minutes, and we'd all be quiet, and he would close his eyes, and then he'd wake up in 10 minutes, and he'd be refreshed and start all over again. And I think he did that many nights for many people for many years.
That is unusual.
Another thing that we haven't mentioned yet, but he started having movies earlier than our time. He had movies for the young people because there weren't really movie theaters around. And he would show movies for the kids, all rated G, I'm sure, because that's what we had then. And he also started Bar None, which was no bar, and none are barred, and it was a dance on New Year's Eve. And we used to have that in. Actually, right over there.
There was a stage.
There was a stage, yes. And we used to have that dance on New Year's Eve, and everybody.
Was it well attended?
Oh, yes.
That was the place to be.
The place to be.
Yes.
The streets.
from Arlington and Grandview is very well attended.
And of course, the best part was all who worked on it started the day after Christmas and worked hard the whole week
to get
so
ready.
So there was always a large group. Yeah. Together doing different things.
Decorations and getting it all.
It was fun.
It was fun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right? Brookie started 55. Two programs for teenagers. One was Block of Wood, and then later was the Seven Keys. The Seven Keys were probably more difficult for him because they were more complete philosophy. But the Block of Wood was our special introduction to Christianity at First Community Church. And we weren't here when the Seven Keys became popular, but the Block of Wood was important, and maybe it would be sort of interesting for each of us to go and maybe make an expression about what it meant to us.
I still have mine. I still have my original Block of Wood and my Seven Keys that I got when I was a teenager. And I wear them on Akita Sunday.
Next week.
And when I go to Akita.
I also remember getting the Block of Wood. I say remember. Was it at Camp Akita? I think it was. But
I think
you
it was,
may
too.
Dispute
I'm not
me.
Sure.
But it always reminds me of Berkey's statement about finding the secret of life. And he also named one of his books that. And that's how I think of it.
I think of it as sort of a growing up. It was a goal to do the work to get that, to be presented with that. And we were 14, something like that, some age. And we had it in the sanctuary. And it was very important that we did that. And you felt very good about it. And you wore it forever.
I was with Susie when we received ours in the sanctuary, but I had another very interesting, wonderful experience when our youngest son got his Block of Wood. I wasn't sure he was going to do it, and they held in a different place this particular year. It was down at Camp Akita, and somebody organized those of us who had Block of Wood of all age groups, and we went in with a candlelight procession, and they were surprised that we had their Block of Wood. And prior to that, each youngster that was going to receive their Block of Wood had picked a friend to give them their Block of Wood. And afterward, our son's name is Mike. He must have gone up to whoever was the head leader then and said, "Could I ask my mother to give me my Block of Wood? I'm getting goosebumps." And I did, and I was able to give him his Block of Wood, and he went out on the balcony and shared communion together. And it's something I always remember.
What a nice remembrance. Well, I wasn't a part of the church then, but I have seven grandchildren that have gotten their blocks of wood, so it's meant a lot to them.
Why do you think we still talk about them? Or is it just our age group that talks about them?
I don't know.
I think people are very curious about him because those of us who knew him talk about him all the time. Mm-hmm. So a lot of questions about him, I think, and curiosity as to who he was and why he's still...
Well, and I think that for me, he made the scriptures feel real. That he would relate scripture to modern life and how that related. And for me, that was the big draw. That he helped us understand. And he, when we had our Wednesday night meetings, he would ask, you could ask any kind of question that you had about something from the Bible that bothered you.
So he was a bridge of understanding for you.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. That's a good way to put
Very
it.
Much.
Yeah.
And he really encouraged you to think about yourself, where you were, and to help steer your path to finding a personal God for yourself, I think. That was was always a quest.
I think that when it came to Akita and some of the things that he did, that there were a lot of young people in big trouble who were kind of saved, if you will, by that experience. Some people who weren't part of the church, and I've met them in the past, and they said, oh, Akita, you know, that's where my life got changed. So I think that
wow.
that still is out there.
So he was really an important part of your lives.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Very much so.
I'd like to read a quote that I found that my mother had written. And she said, Berkey believed in the divine in everyone and could convince many persons to excel in ways they did not think possible. And that's what wow. I think was so powerful with young people. Mm-hmm. He really did bring out the best in all of us, I think.
It's interesting that most of us at this table graduated from high school at about the same time he retired.
That's true.
And so his impact was on us as teenagers, and then we did not see him for a period of time while we went to college, or if we were in college in Columbus, we would come back to church here. But generally, all our experiences are as a teenager, and it's amazing how those experiences have been stayed with us for so many years.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to say something else about this silence, because we did have Vespers in the morning, or we also had Vespers in the evening.
Mm-hmm.
And many times at the end of Vespers in the evening, you left and went back to your cabin, but you weren't allowed to talk. So it was carrying whatever you had thought about or witnessed during the day or the evening to the twilight with you. And then you awoke with it also. And it was a wonderful learning experience that was not imposed upon you like a yoga might be or a Eastern meditation might be. It was just an event that allowed you to be yourself in the quiet. And I think that's was very important to most of us, and not something I don't think that we experience today with earbuds and headphones and the quiet, which was a phrase that was put over top of the fireplace at Akita, be quiet, be still, I think survives to this day, and we should probably teach it to our grandchildren. I think it might be interesting for us to go around the table and talk about our parents, because our parents were participating in the church at that time, either in leadership roles or attendance roles or teaching roles. And we know our personal experiences, but I think we, if we reflect, can think of something that our mom or dad did in the church congregation and why Berkey was important to that or not to that. And I can start off by saying that when we moved here from Washington, D.C. in the early 50s, my father, who was a very good Protestant, loved the essence of Protestantism, which is preaching, and always looked for a church where there was a good preacher. And we had been in Columbus a short period of time, and he found the best preacher in Central Ohio at the time, which is Burkhart, and they became good friends. And Dad worked at Nationwide, and there was a man at Nationwide that ran WRFD, which is a radio station. And that radio station, along with some people in, I think, Oklahoma, started World Neighbors, which was an organization that still exists that went throughout the world helping people who needed help. Dad was part of that organization, and also part of a breakfast group that Burkhart did. Berkey would go to where the men were set aside time for them, and he very much enjoyed the morning breakfasts with Berkey and other men in the church.
My grandparents were actually charter members of the old church in 1910, and they lived in Grandview, and my grandfather, I don't remember as much because I was only 9 when he passed away, but my grandmother came to church here, and my mother came to church here and brought us. My father was a doctor, and he made his rounds on Sunday morning so he could manage to have some time with his family and make his rounds before everybody was there. So she was the one who always brought us to church. And she was active, I think, with some of the... She was in a guild group, and she was active with some of the women's groups.
Mm-hmm. My grandparents were also early members of First Community, so my father and my uncle grew up here. And after my father went into the war, I think my mother became more active in the church. She spoke about coming down here to find a lot of women whose husbands were away, and Berkey always encouraged them to get together. And I think she really that's when she found meaning in being here. And my sister and I were baptized in this church, and I was married here. And two things I can remember were important to our family. When you were talking about the building of Camp Akita, my parents' couple circle went to camp and stayed a whole week and built cabin number 8, which was the number of their camp couple circle.
The first habitat.
Yes, that's right. And then my dad always participated in any building projects, such as the remodeling of Akita, doing woodworking projects for them and so forth. So our family did have a real strong grounding in this church.
My parents and my family moved here from Bowling Green, Ohio, in a big Methodist church. And they were my parents were very active in the Methodist church. And I know this for a fact, that when they signed the lease or the mortgage to our house, the first thing they asked the realtor was, where's the church? And he said, First Community Church, it's in Grandview, and they couldn't find it. They looked and looked, and they couldn't find Grandview, but they finally found it, and very active. My father was a deacon, and they were also in a couple circle. I don't know when they started couple circles, but they were in one, which I think was a great help to not knowing a soul in Columbus, Ohio. So that was very important to them, as it has been to myself and my husband.
I have friends in couple circles that have been going on for 40 years.
Mm-hmm. Well, we're 19, so that's...
Wonderful, wonderful organizations.
I've been in ours since 1963.
Oh, that's
and
wonderful.
Even though I'm a widow, I'm still welcome because they're my second family.
I'm very envious of those affiliations.
We're just about the same length, too. As far as my parents being active, I don't think they were really active in the church, maybe partly because they didn't drive until much later on. So we would come to church, as I mentioned earlier, by bus. It was a rain. They didn't want to miss, so I will say it was a rainy Sunday. My dad would spring for a cab, and we arrived in a cab. But they never wanted to miss Sunday and hear Dr. Burkhart. So they had a strong feeling for it, but they weren't doing a lot outside other than Sunday, but they were always here on Sunday mornings. They didn't want to miss.
I think everybody's had quite a lot to say, and it's been really useful for me to hear all of this, and I hope you have found it useful for yourselves as well. Thank you so much for coming. Thank you so much for sharing. We really appreciate this little gathering. It means a lot to us, and it will mean a lot to people in the future, I'm sure. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.